Hello, welcome to the DubDub Review, and I'm your host, Chris Malik. And I'm joined for part two of our Paris show by my good friend, Michael Black. Michael, again, how are you?
Still fantastic, Chris.
It hasn't changed. It's still good.
Nope.
Outstanding.
Still good.
Okay, so we are back with part two of our Paris show. So just to bring listeners up to speed, if you didn't hear the first show, is I took the family on a Christmas vacation to Paris, France, to go see actually the sights of Paris and to go see Disneyland Paris, the Disneyland Paris Resort, the hotel, the Walt Disney Studios, and all that entails, which is about 40 minutes west of the city of Paris. So where did we leave off? We left off with exploring the city like the first 3 days, right, buddy?
Yeah, I think we did, and I'm anxious to keep moving.
Cool.
I was enthralled by your first 3 days. So.
Well, I forgot some stuff, and I want to mention some stuff just briefly before we go to the Disneyland part of the show. And the first is this, and you'll appreciate this because I know your driving tendencies. Michael, you live in Orlando, Florida, roughly. And so on I-4 and in the Orlando traffic, it's typically a parking lot, but it can be a madhouse. Agreed?
Yeah, it's a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. I live in the city of Chicago's western suburbs, and I grew up a Chicago kid driving downtown. So I'm very familiar with both very aggressive, very passive, very sedentary driving, and dog-eat-dog type driving. Nothing in my life prepared me for watching the driving of Parisians around the actual city itself. It is unlike anything you have ever seen in your life. And as in a matter of fact, I consider myself a good driver. I drive a large vehicle every day, and I'm very adept at parallel parking it and weaving in and out of traffic if need be. I would be like the worst driver in Paris, and I'm a good driver. So it's a combination of like everything is smaller and more efficient than in America. Like the cars are just, there's no Dodge Chargers. There's no full-size pickup trucks. Everything's just a little smaller. Mix that with legitimately everybody owns a scooter of various models. Mix that with everybody has the electric-powered Lime, who is the company, supplied like scooter that you like just, you step on, you drive to your location, and you download the app, and then you get off and you just leave it, and then someone picks it and takes it to the next spot.
Right.
There's about eight companies who supply eight various scooters, mixed with about four different bicycle companies, and they're all on the street together, and they're all obeying traffic laws, but not obeying traffic laws at the same time. There are no lines that delineate traffic both in directions. There is a pedestrian zone, sidewalk, and there is like a scooter like area of the street. Nobody pays attention to it, and they're all going in the same general direction. The only rule there is in Parisian traffic is when the light says red, you stop. It doesn't tell you where to stop. You literally just stop. So we have had times where the car and the bus stop in the middle of the intersection, like car freeze tag, red light, stop. And then the cars try and go the opposite way, but there's a cluster because everyone's stopped in the middle of the street, mixing scooters in left and right and around it, and people on scooters left and right with no helmets. I got to tell you, it is the most psychotic thing you'll ever see in your life.
And pandemonium.
You know what? Pandemonium would be the organized word for what you see. And I sent you a video kind of to show you what it's like. And there are pedestrians crossing the streets. I tell you, as a Chicagoan, I'm familiar with crazy driving. We have nothing on the people of Paris and how people don't get in like monumental accidents every day, and there's more bodies on the side of the street. I will never know. So just something to be aware of. If you're thinking of renting a car in Paris, don't do it. Don't do it. Listen to your good buddy, Chris. Don't do it. A, there's no parking. B, you are completely unprepared for the driving tendencies of Parisians. Now, on the expressway that you take to get to Disneyland, it's completely normal. Inside the city limits, it's like Paris Thunderdome. Like 1,000 cars enter, one car leaves. It is nuts. So just bear in mind, don't rent the car. Take a shuttle, take the metro, take the RER, take the bus, walk. Don't rent a car. Okay, that's my tip for the day.
Got it.
So we're in Paris, And we have to figure out, I left off with the metro's not working, right? There's a Parisian strike. The RER, they're under the same workers' strike. So that's another train line that goes out west towards Disneyland Paris. Now, every day, the hours of operation, you know, because they're a little more civil, so the strike hours of operation change every day. Some days you got to board from 6 until 9, and then you got to reboard from 4 until 6 on the way back. Some days it's from 7 until 9. Some days it's from 6 until 8. You never know until the very next day when you check the website what the hours of operation are. So it's a little chaotic. We bailed. We were like, all right, nuts to that. We need some certainty. So we used a company called Paris City Vision, which is a bus line. So we had to walk to essentially the Louvre, which was about a half a mile, three quarters of a mile every day to board this bus. So you can imagine taking a shuttle bus, a coach, out to 40 miles, 40 minutes west and back for five people. It was expensive. But the train is still rather expensive. The train's about anywhere from... It ended up being between, like, say, $55 to, like, $62 for the family both ways. And the shuttle bus was about $80 both ways. So for the certainty, we just opted for the shuttle bus. And I didn't mean dollars. I meant euros. So it ended up being about $100 to go to and from. And you're like, wait a minute, I can get, like, the Magical Express or Disney Transport for nothing. You're right. You can. But we had absolute guarantees we were going to get there and get back. And remember, you're in Paris. You're going. It's not a matter of questioning the price. It is what it is, unless you're staying out in the Disneyland resort. So we're on a shuttle bus. Here's the downside. We never got to stay past 6 o'clock in any evening. The latest the shuttle bus would board was like 6:30, and you were back in Paris by 7:30, 7:45. So I do not know what anything after 6:30 looks like. Because, again, the Paris Metro strike, which wouldn't have been a case in a month from now, but that was the circumstance we had. So it was expensive, but you had to play by the rules that were given, you know? And it's better to get a little bit of something than nothing at all. And you're there. So what are you going to do? You're going to rent an Uber? You're going to get an Uber for 180 euros? You know? I mean, it's just not practical, you know?
Yeah.
So you might think, should I stay at the Disneyland Hotel? Before we enter the park, let me just squash that notion. The lobby looks very nice. It's kind of a combination, a short version of the Grand Floridian mixed with a little bit of beach club. And it's very nice. It feels what a Disneyland lobby should feel like on a smaller scale. There's no quick service. The restaurant dining options are all essentially in one area. And it's not quite what you think of in terms of like Florida or California, like resort style. The pool option is in a tiny corner of this building. The pool is, I'm going to say it's 20 feet wide by 40 feet. It's a square pool, completely not magical by your US standards of what a pool should look like or themed. So I'm trying to get a picture, but here I am like, I don't want to take a picture because I don't want to be the creepy guy in vacation taking a picture of the pool and the people in the pool.
Hey, but, what are you saying?
You know what I'm saying? But like, if you're thinking like the Disneyland Resort or the Sequoia Lodge or anything is going to be like what it is at the Wilderness Lodge, it's not. It isn't. It's a European version, which is a little more, it's opulent in its own way, but it's not what you're used to. So again, my tip is stay in Paris. Pay for the shuttle, pay for the RER train, whatever you need to do, but stay in Paris as opposed to staying in Disney and going to Paris. Do Paris and go to Disney. So that's my tip of the day for that. As you enter Disneyland, the bus lets you off and you're in a like a people mover walkway type situation where you got to actually walk legitimately about a mile to get to the park entrance. As you enter the Disneyland park, you actually enter the base level of the Disneyland Hotel where the ticket stations are at. It's like a hollowed out, like it's the bottom of the Disneyland Hotel. You scan your tickets, you walk in this courtyard, you go under under the train tracks, and you're in Main Street, USA. It's literally Main Street, USA. And it's beautiful. It has some things that the Walt Disney World and the Disneyland parks don't have. So remember, you're in European standards, so they're used to beautiful gardens. You're close to Versailles. The gardens are the most beautiful gardens and landscaping on the planet. You're close to the Luxembourg Gardens, which are very pretty in the middle of downtown Paris. European standards for landscaping are different than the American standards. They're used to seeing beautiful things. So it was very beautiful. I might say that in terms of the flora, the topography, the topiaries, and it's prettier. It might be the prettiest of all three that I mentioned. But as you walk down Main Street, it tries to capture like the Disney magic that like you feel when you walk down Main Street. You still probably get those goosebumps even now, you as a Florida resident. When you walk down Main Street, there's something. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's your childhood. I don't know if it's the smell or the sights, but it's
the stroller in your back.
Right. Yeah, exactly. The ECV.
It's something.
It tries so hard to capture that, and it just doesn't quite get it. It's there, but it's not quite there, if you understand what I'm saying.
Well, I'll tell you, the castle, though, is beautiful.
Gorgeous.
When I was watching your video, one of the videos heading down Main Street, I thought, wow, that castle at the end, ours doesn't compare. I mean, it's just this little, I don't even know how to explain it. When I'm looking at it, I'm seeing that castle in Paris, and I'm like, that is extravagant. It's amazing.
Okay. So good point. And there's a reason for that. So first off, the castle below the castle, there is a secret. There is and my French is terrible, so please excuse me. It's the La Tierre or something, Du Dragon. It's a dragon's lair underneath the castle. And there is a dragon, and you have to walk in the cave to see the dragon under the castle. And inside, there is Maleficent and all these beautiful stained glass windows. And it is really pretty. And I remember watching a special, and they said, we had to make the castle fabulous. In Europe, castles are a dime a dozen. Everyone has a castle. I mean, it exists. It's not like you live in Chicago and there are nice houses and mansions. Like, castles are relatively common in Europe. So we had to upstage the castles of Europe. So that's what they did. It's shorter, though, than the Walt Disney World castle. It's shorter by about 20 feet. Per, again, Mark Eddington's Things I Love page on YouTube, I found out it was shorter by about 20 feet. It is pretty. It tries. It wants to be. But there was just something that was just different about it.
Well, let me ask you this. The last time that you went, and I'm just going off of the videos that I have, it was Christmas. Mm-hmm. So the music you're listening to isn't your typical going down Main Street music. It's Christmas music. The last time that you went years ago, was it Christmas then as well? Or was it?
Yes.
It was.
It was. But that was 15 years ago. So my memories, again, are really, really foggy. I remember eating Dole Whips with my beautiful wife on the back of the paddle wheel boat in the snow. That's what my memory was. It was snowing as we're eating Dole Whips.
Right. Well, that's the only reason I ask, is I wonder if that music has anything to do with it. When you walk down Main Street at Christmas, to me, it has a different feel than on a normal time of the year, walking down Main Street at Walt Disney World. I wonder if that had a difference, or what do you think it was?
I don't know. I can tell you a few of my thoughts. So as you walk down Main Street, I immediately felt, even as you enter the courtyard, this is prettier than Walt Disney World. Just, it felt prettier. It felt that way. They had the bells ringing and then snow falling, and I kind of thought it was comical. There was bubble snow falling in a climate where there could legitimately be snow falling as bubbles are hitting you. But, you know, it was fitting. The Christmas music was nice. It wasn't like Disney Christmas. It was nice. But, again, there was just something. Maybe it wasn't my park. You know how it's like, not my park? It wasn't my park. I was a visitor to this park. Mm-hmm. As you turn left, where Tomorrowland would be, their Tomorrowland's called Discovery Land. And they have Hyperspace Mountain, which is their Space Mountain version. It used to be Jules Verne. It used to be themed to, it wasn't 20,000 Leagues. It was a Jules Verne Journey to the Center of the Earth was what the old theming was. Now it's Hyperspace Mountain for Star Wars. They did a great job. It is way more aggressive, that coaster, than the Disneyland or Walt Disney World version. There's a loop in it. And it's just, it it rattles you. It rattles your cage as you go around. So it's an aggressive version of the ride. They had the Nemo attraction, the Star Tours, the Autopia. The Autopia was really cute. They had the Orbitron, which is like the Astro Orbiter, a lesser version of the Astro Orbiter. Their Fantasyland is big. Their Small World is really nice. No questions there. The Dumbo, they have a maze, which was really cute. It was a maze set to Alice in Wonderland, like a real like topiary garden maze. And it would take you, an adult, 10, 12, 15 minutes to walk through the maze. It was really pretty cute. The payoff was a elevated scene at the end where you went into a castle and you could kind of overlook Fantasyland and Disneyland Paris. It was nice. Fantasyland was probably their biggest land, though the attractions in Fantasyland, there were some that, like I mentioned earlier, that might be the worst. Like, they had the Storybook Canal Boats. And in Walt Disney World, the Storybook Canal Boats are piloted by a cast member through these little vignettes where they talk about, like, you see this little miniature village from Tangled and Frozen and The Little Mermaid and Snow White, and it's cute, and they have little music playing and the figures are there. They had about 8 little stories in Paris. One of them was the Land of Oz, so that didn't quite fit. One of them was a French story I didn't recognize, and it was kind of like there was no cohesive like theme to the stories, and even still, like, the stories didn't quite, like, it wasn't like, huh, that's Arendelle or that's the mermaid's you know castle. It was pulled by a cable, so there wasn't a pilot, so it kind of felt like a cheapened version of that attraction. It didn't quite feel as authentic. They have Casey Jr. Train, which wasn't actually a train, it was a roller coaster that was on a flat roller coaster track, so it didn't feel like a train. It felt like a flat roller coaster track. It was very smooth, but it didn't quite feel the same as Casey Jr. in Disneyland. Though it was the largest land. Here was the, so far we're halfway through the park. Here was the curious thing. Not all food operations were open that day. So in what bizarre planet is the busiest time of the year doesn't have all the food operations open? And you felt it, because when you walked into the next food, like the quick service or sit down, it was busy, like super busy. Busy enough where, frankly, the other food operations should have been opened. You know, so like in Walt Disney World, you might have a seasonal closure of something that wasn't as busy, you know, or like, you know, Stitch is closed or they need to do a refurbishment. There were multiple options that just were simply closed. And I didn't understand that because this is the busy time of year, but it is what it is. They, as you go left, you're in Adventureland and Adventure Isle. And Adventure Isle is an island with a pirate ship in the middle and caverns and like you can walk through. And it was about as well-themed. Now, I'm a sucker for Adventureland in Walt Disney World. It's my favorite land. It just feels the most authentic. The Adventureland here felt the exact same. It might have been better because the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction in Disneyland Paris, it is superior to what we have in Florida and superior to what we have in California, which is better than the one we have in Florida. I don't know if it's the outside queuing area. I don't know if it's the fort. I don't know if it's the inside queuing line, which is tremendous and takes you through a village, or the fact that like the story is like a cohesive like 3 or 4 part story. There's 2 drops on it. It is the best Pirates ride I've been on yet. So, again, and I'm a pirate. That's my favorite attraction in Walt Disney World, and it was pretty much my favorite attraction in. Though I like the Tower of Terror, pretty much my favorite attraction in Disneyland too as well. This is better. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. They also had an Indiana Jones coaster called Temple of Peril. And it was like a, it was not quite, it's not like the Mine Train. It's not quite like Space Mountain. It's more like, imagine Primeval World, but without the spinning. So on that kind of track, like a, it's called a...
like a mouse coaster.
Yeah, yeah, like a cat and mouse type coaster. Yeah. But it was well-themed. It was fun. It was enjoyable. We did it in the morning. It was cool. As you walk down towards Frontierland, now you're getting into what almost feels like California. As it goes around the rivers of America, they have a river of something. I don't want to call it River of America. They have a River of Paris, you know, River of France, with the Molly Brown, and it's a side paddle wheel boat. And it was really nice. It was enjoyable. The headline attraction wasn't Phantom Manor. It was Big Thunder Mountain. So, you know, Big Thunder Mountain, when you go to, like, the Magic Kingdom, it's busy. But, like, on our show, in 220 episodes, no one's put their hand up and said, Big Thunder Mountain, number one attraction, A1, can't miss it. Right? I mean, I've never heard that.
Right, right.
It is the A number one attraction in that park. And I tell you this, it's not like the queue is great. It isn't. It's a Big Thunder Mountain type queue. The moment you ride that ride, it is significantly more aggressive than any other big mountain you've ever been on. It takes you from the queuing station down into a tunnel. It's a little quick. And then down into this black tunnel. And it goes under the Rivers of America. And it shoots you up to an island in the middle that's completely isolated by water, where the Big Thunder Mountain roller coaster takes place in the middle of this island. And it's wicked. It's going around corners like it's not double the speed of Florida. It's an exaggeration, but it feels like that. So much so where you would think Big Thunder Mountain is a hum ho. It's just an attraction. Like when we all got off it, we were like, that was awesome. So if you have a chance to go there, Big Thunder and Pirates, significantly better than anything you've been on stateside. So much so where, like, that's their attraction is Big Thunder. Really cool. And it takes some beautiful pictures of it. Phantom Manor is their haunted mansion. So that's kind of in the corner. And the way the map's situated, it almost looks like it's in the front, but it's kind of in the corner of Frontierland. Their Phantom Manor has a cohesive storyline, unlike the one in Florida. It's the Phantom. The Phantom is the person involved and the bride. And it shows the Phantom and the bride several times. I don't want to give the story away, but it's spookier than like you're used to. The one in Florida kind of plays upon like comic relief, you know, where there's funny scenes. They tried to work funny scenes in, but it was an afterthought. They went for scary. Scary was the intent of this one. You know, after the Phantom digs the grave for the bride, you descend, you know, into the graveyard scene in Florida. You descend into the underworld, and there are skeletons. And yeah, one of the skeletons is playing, a xylophone of bones. But they went for like a different intent with this one. So at first we wrote it, and we were like, I don't know if I like that. And then you like paid attention to details, and all of a sudden, like, it was good. Like you follow the story better, and you saw the Phantom in like four or five or six different scenes. And you enjoyed it. And it was like, whoa, that's a little different. The pictures in the stretching room are different and more aggressive. Like a human being is sitting on a boat that's going to go over the rocks and completely, like, he's going to die. Or he's sitting on a table with a saw that's going to split him in half. Like, a little more angry than the haunted mansions you're used to. So, you know, I don't know if that's better or worse for people. Just different and a definite different intent than what you're used to. So, questions so far, buddy. I know I'm rolling here.
No, I'm following right along.
Okay.
I got you. I think it's hilarious that you think that I'm going to ride Big Thunder or Pirates with two drops. But, hey.
Michael, the pirate story is so good. As you walk into the interior queue, you walk into a village that's like, it's a downhill path. It's literally like a meandering downhill path with palm trees, and you smell the same water. And there's a pirate ship that's in the queue. As you ride the attraction, you ride through that very same broken pirate ship. So they worked in the pirate ship on the queue and in the attraction, and you rode your boat through like this broken apart, like destroyed pirate ship. Like, really cool usage of queue material and ride material at the same point. So as you go uphill, I know I'm back to the pirates. Like, I got this pirate, it's such a good ride. As you go uphill, it has this like mechanism on the side where it looks like it's this old wooden like chain pulling you up, and it's this ominous music. You'll hear the music. I'm sure I caught the video for you. So cool. It puts you in such the right mood to ride the pirates attraction. And then you landed into the battleship battle and you saw the dunking of the mayor and Barbossa and the cannonballs. But like everything that was good in a pirate attraction, they put in this attraction. So like that alone made it worth it. Cause like I'm a big fan of the pirate ride. We didn't
well, go I'll to tell you, go I'm just going to say that I've told myself if I ever do make it to Shanghai, that that's the pirates that I will ride. I don't care how much it drops. I don't care what it does. That attraction at Shanghai looks like next level.
And that's what Jesus Crespo says the same thing to Shanghai. But if you have a chance to go to Paris, don't like pass on this. It's not the drops are maybe 20 feet and it's a 15 degree angle. It's not what you think a drop is. So worth it. So completely worth it. The train wasn't going, so we didn't go on the train, and we didn't go and see PhilharMagic over there because at that point we were pretty limited in time. We got there by like 9:15, and we'd be back on the bus by 6. You count lunch, you count bathroom breaks, and your clock's ticking. So you're moving and you're trying to get stuff in all day long. Overall, though, one of the things that really impressed me, which had nothing to do with like the park, was the design. And by the way, Frontierland looks just like it as you walked along the river. It was themed really, really well. They did a really good job. On Main Street, left side and right side, on the Discovery Arcade or the Liberty Arcade. Now, don't think video game as arcade. Think of passageway. They intentionally built these paths that weren't on Main Street, were left and right, so when you left at nighttime in the middle of fireworks, you didn't have to hit Main Street up. They tried to retrofit this in Magic Kingdom. They intentionally built covered paths that had bathrooms that were completely themed to America, Statue of Liberty, and like various states, and it was like the smartest like exterior exit like you could possibly imagine. Like someone said, okay, what did we do wrong in California and Florida to get people out of this park? And we're going to solve it. And they did. They built these two long passageways that are completely hidden under dark, under cover, that you would clearly see if you were going from the castle out, but you wouldn't necessarily see from like going towards the castle. It was completely smart, completely genius. So that's our first day. We spent the next day at the Walt Disney Studios, which is their version of Hollywood Studios. And so this is where the trip kind of took a little bit of a side detour on day two. 32 degrees, misty, windy, cloudy, just an overall yucky day. But we started the day off at the Tower of Terror, and their Tower of Terror is good. It's like the California one. It's been changed over now. The elevator doesn't leave the actual like platform like it does in Florida. It stays and it just goes up and down, but it's still themed really well. And that's the headline attraction. They don't have many attractions. You initially walk after you enter this park through this little like this studio's courtyard. It's called the Place de Studio One. All the food options and store is under like a big building. It's Studio One. And it's about 100 yards of a walk. As soon as you exit Studio One, you're legitimately in like the attractions portion of the park. The Tower of Terror is about a 15-degree left-hand turn and about 100 yards. Immediately to my left would be like, it's not Crush, it's Stitches. You know how you can talk to Crush? They have a Stitch version of that over there. So that's cool. It was adorable, and it got you out of the cold for a while. As behind that is Lights, Motors, Action, Stunt Show. And have you ever gone to that? Did you ever remember that?
Oh, yeah. We loved it here.
It's still there. It originated in Disneyland Paris, and they brought it to the States, and then eventually they did away with it in the States, but it's still here. It played to a packed stadium. Packed is probably more than 1,000 people, maybe 1,500 people. It played to a packed stadium, and it was really good still. They know how to go and like entertain a crowd. But I counted. I know why they pulled it out. I mean, not only because it ran its course. At one time, they had 20 like ancillary cast members working in addition to the drivers So there was probably 30 cast members, in addition to all the space required, in addition to the cast members I didn't see for light and sound and stuff like that, in addition to the repairs of the cars, the tire needs, the gas and stuff along those lines, as well as the training. That's an expensive attraction to keep up, you know, so I could see why the cost, mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, the tower, like in my mind's eye, you need like five people to run the tower, you know? So, but in this one, it was at least 30 people to run this attraction. But it was worthwhile. It lasted for 30 minutes or so. I know I have a video for you of one of the car chases.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't understand a word they were saying.
Me neither. Don't worry. You knew you were going to see smoke and fire and shooting, and it was good. They are building an Avengers Academy over there. It's not called the Avengers Academy, but it's in Avengers Land. So I know that's coming. And thank goodness, because the attractions I just described, that's roughly two-thirds of the attractions you're going to ride in the park. So it is a four-hour experience with average crowds. For us, it was about a six-hour experience. In no way, and I'm not being snarky, you know how they say the studios is a half-day park? Not anymore, but like they used to say it's a half-day park. Mm-hmm. This is the epitome of a half-day park. It really is. They have Crush's Coaster, which is a spinning coaster. They have the Aladdin's Carpets. Toy Story Playland had a few attractions. Nothing major there. They did have the Studios Backlot Tour, where you go to Catastrophe Canyon. Their headliner would have been the Tower and the Remy attraction, the Ratatouille ride, the one that's coming to Epcot.
Right.
So if they can reproduce the Remy attraction like it is in Paris, it'll be one of Epcot's best attractions. Have you been on the Penguin attraction at SeaWorld, Michael?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, a few times, yeah.
So it's a trackless attraction using 3D and like oversized, like scale, like things. And the 3D is seamless along with the mouse vehicle you board. It was really fun. It was really good. And part of the attraction actually has Remy's restaurant like inside of it. So you can actually like see. So if they design where there is a dining option in Epcot where you actually are part of the attraction, it'll be one of the best rides they have in Epcot. Really, really good. And within that, I've named everything in this park. So you're like, yikes, do I need to spend a full day? The absolute not. We bought a third ticket because remember, we're leaving at 6 o'clock. We didn't know that. We didn't know how many things there would be to do. So on the third day, we went back and we did the things we missed. We went back and, you know, we actually did a Lights, Motors, Action on the third day instead. We did Indiana Jones. We never really repeated any attractions. We did Big Thunder Mountain on the third day. We did Phantom Manor. But it wouldn't be necessary. If you were going to go to Disneyland Paris, you could do it in 2 days. And this is from a guy who, like, you know, I love Disney. You can do it in 2 days. If you were going at Christmas time, you might need a third day. But I was leaving early. So if I stayed till 9 o'clock, you could probably legitimately do it in 2 days. If you bought more than a 3-day ticket, you'll be repeating yourself to the point where you won't be enjoying it. So that's my advice for you. It's a 3-day ticket, probably a 2-day ticket. If you really, really, really wanted to stay and do things multiple times, it's a 4-day ticket. You should never buy anything more than 4 days. Should is a strong word. I wouldn't recommend you buying anything more than 4 days. 3 days is the max I would consider buying, and 2 days is realistic.
And are those tickets, when you buy them, are they automatically hoppers, or is it single park?
When we bought them, they were automatically hoppers. We didn't actually buy them from the Disney website. We bought them from a different website, and I can go and pull up where I bought it from. It was a legitimate company through England. It was about $15 cheaper per ticket. So there was a savings. I bought, you know, essentially I bought 15 tickets. So it was $150 or so that it was cheaper. And on the outside of the Disneyland park, there's a little area where you scan your ticket, and then it fires off the real tickets for you. You scan your voucher, and okay, we were good. But again, if you were debating how many to buy, if you were going there, again, stay in Paris. You don't have to stay in the Disneyland park, because remember, you're visiting the city of Paris. You want to see the sights of Paris too. Even if it's just the same amount of time, it's easier to get out to Disneyland than to get into Paris, because Paris is, kind of a cluster that you have to navigate. Once you get your way out in Paris, then go to Disneyland, feels like a piece of cake. To do the opposite, to go from being like city mouse, country mouse to city mouse is harder than being city mouse to country mouse, if that makes sense to anybody. Food was not as good as the States. None of the food was, as far as Disneyland food. It just, it doesn't seem to be a priority for them. Like, and they had no problem with you bringing in food. So, in fact, we made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches one day. So, but like the food options, there was no Mickey bars. Frankly, I didn't see any Dole Whips. They do have Mickey pretzels, but the food options just wasn't like the emphasis wasn't placed on food as it was in the stateside. So, I don't know if that's a major disappointment. They did have a few things. Let me ask you a question here about a sandwich. I took a picture. Because we're eating. Hang on, I want to go and pull up this picture. So you'll have to buy me 1 second. It just, it occurred to me that it was a really strange menu option. And so just bear with me here. I'm trying to locate it, and I need your professional help here to tell me if this is good.
Okay, will do.
You good?
And I'll tell you, I'll kill some time here because there's something I wanted to mention about the studios. That's where the Toy Story stuff was, correct?
Yes.
Like the where the RC car that goes up and down.
Yes.
And then they had a Slinky that just kind of went around.
Yes.
In a circle. I've often wondered, I think that RC attraction is really cool. And I've often wondered how easy that would be to put over there to give Toy Story Land a third attraction. That or a fourth. I forget. They spun Toy Story Midway Mania around, so then it's part of Toy Story Land too. Mm-hmm. But that or the parachuting ones, I think that's at maybe Tokyo, or I can't remember where.
No,
that
it's here. There's a parachute.
Is it Hong Kong? Is it there too?
It's the Army Man drop. The reason why I didn't mention it much was we went on the Slinky Dog ride, and I think the total ride time was less than 15 seconds, and we waited for about 40 minutes, and I felt let down. So as I watched the RC racer, it went up and back 4 times, and that was the end of the ride. I always felt like we were getting like the shortened version of the rides to move people through. So whatever like thrill or whatever memory you would attach to it, by the time the ride was going full speed, it was stopping. And it was like, oh, I just waited 40 minutes for that. You know, that was cool. So the Army Man ride, really cool, but again, it took you up and it dropped you maybe twice, and then that was it as well too. So
I see
it does exist. So I'm not a I love the Disney product, and I'm not a Disney hater, nor am I snarky with this stuff. Some of the attractions just felt like we needed to take an attraction, slap on the Slinky Dog face. It just didn't feel like. I hate
the, now that one didn't. When I saw that, I was like, "That's ridiculous."
It felt cheap.
Completely understand. Yeah,
like Crush's coaster. It's a cat and mouse coaster that spins, but you're in a turtle shell, and the theming of the queue is really cool. Great job. Okay, we made a Disney attraction out of something that wouldn't be considered a regular attraction, but some of them felt like we needed to attach the Disney name to it as quickly as possible, and it just didn't quite feel right. It didn't feel as fleshed out as like when you go to the Haunted Mansion or Big Thunder or something. It just didn't quite feel right. So anyways, here we go. Tell me if this sounds good. This is called the Magical Melt Burger, and this is the English translation. It's a beef burger. It has a patty of breaded cheese. You heard me right. It has red onions. It has cornflakes on it. It has gherkins, which is their pickles, and smoked flavor sauce. Does the patty of breaded cheese and cornflakes, does that make you want to buy the burger? I've got to know.
I could do without the cornflakes, but I could take me a hunk of breaded cheese.
Anytime. So if I offered you that, okay, and I offered you that with a cold drink, that burger, French fries, and then a small cupcake, what would you be willing to spend American for that?
Willing, or are we going what I think a Disney park would
charge? Yes, exactly, buddy.
Let's go $17.99 because they're throwing in dessert.
You're close, brother. It's $16.99 in terms of euros. So you're $20. It's $20 is what it costs. Whew. Yeah.
They did throw in dessert.
They did throw in a cupcake type thing. So, you know, it's cool. If you bring in your own food, remember, I mean, you had to get there and we had to pay for the park tickets and we paid for the shuttle bus. And like when you're staring down like the barrel of like $100 for lunch and you're like, oh my gosh, that line's like 35 minutes long and I've got like only 7 hours in the park. I literally looked at my wife and I was like, tomorrow we're going to go to the Monoprix, which is the grocery store, and we're going to go and buy sandwich bread, peanut butter and jelly, and we're bringing a whole bunch of sandwiches so we can eat and not spend a fortune and like eat quicker than waiting in these lines for people, which made me question again why not everything was open, you know. So
yeah, that makes sense though. I mean, that definitely, if you could save yourself time and money,
yeah,
it's a win-win.
So again, studios, it's truly half day. The Disneyland park is a full day, and you could probably squeak out another full day in between there. We only truthfully saw, and so I can't really tell you about the Sequoia Lodge and the Newport Bay Hotel. We only saw their headliner, which was the Disneyland Hotel. And, you know, I love the Disney park, the Disney resorts. You know that. I can make an excuse to go to Saratoga or Old Key West or any time of the day. That's part of my... I wasn't impressed. I just didn't feel like it was what I was used to. It's probably very, very nice. But if you want authentic and you want a diversion to Disney, stay in Paris. That's my advice for that. Three days on a bus back and forth. And by the third day, we're already like in like our sixth or seventh day. And the kids are just beat and they're exhausted. Like I could barely get them on the bus because we have to wake up at 5:40 for us all to shower and then eat breakfast and get there. So they are tired. We've got one day left in Paris and we plan this strategically because the day we leave, Michael, my plane leaves Charles de Gaulle at 8 a.m. So according to them, because I have a shared shuttle, my pickup time is 4:05 a.m. So wow. When you have a pickup time at 4:05, that alarm's got to be set for 2:45 a.m. And that's a sobering thought when you have one more day of vacation. So we're like, we can't spend it at Disney, get home late, and then do a quick turnaround, make sure everything's packed for like a 16-hour travel day. So we had one day left at Paris. And I should say that anything that you think of, if you look at a Paris guidebook and you look at the top 25 attractions in the city of Paris, we did 20 of the 25 attractions. We legitimately hit everything in the city. And like the kids were into it the entire time. They were cool about it. It was fun. The one thing they really wanted to do was to go see the catacombs of Paris. Are you familiar with the catacombs, Michael?
I am not.
Okay. So though a history fan's probably going to grimace and say I told the story wrong, essentially, a lot of Paris was built at the same time, and they used this Lucian stone, and it's found and it's harvested, frankly, under the city of Paris. And they had to go down, and they dug these miles and miles of chambers of tunnels to go and harvest this wonderful gray stone. Then they had these tunnels, which were used for a variety of reasons, for religious ceremonies when Christians were persecuted, and they kind of, you know, it was used for a variety of ways. As Paris grew up, it was also suffering the effects of like the bubonic plague and these illnesses, and people were dying and they were buried in cemeteries around these various arrondissements of Paris. And it got that so many people were passing away, like it became unsanitary. So at one point, I'm not sure if he was, and again, this is where I apologize for my history. The story is accurate to a certain point. A government official said, "That's it. Dig everyone up. We're storing all their bones and all the dead bodies in the catacombs." So they transported all these bodies of people that passed away and bones of people, and they took them from the city proper, the city above, and they put them in the city below, and they filled these tunnels in with these bones. So as you walk down 150 feet below the streets of Paris, the catacombs are famous. There are horror stories about like it's like the entrance to the gates of hell, and there's a scary movie called As Above, So Below. It's recent. It's on Amazon Prime. It's a scary movie about the catacombs of Paris. It's filled from foot to toe with tibias and fibulas and skulls, and they're sorted and they're like stacked up nicely. kind of like on display. And as you walk through this one area, you realize, wow, that's a lot of bones. And you realize you're seeing about 2% of the catacombs. Under the streets of Paris, there's, ballpark estimate, like 60 miles of tunnels. And they're all filled in with bones and like passageways. And no one's ever navigated the complete catacombs of Paris because it's like the most ingenious, maddening, like, labyrinth you'll ever have in your life. So, of course, my kids wanted to go see it. So we take a metro, and we descend down, and you find, like, little areas. You can't touch the bones. They don't want you taking a flash. And it's stacked up all based upon, like, the cemetery. So St. Eustache, that I mentioned earlier, has this area. And it's floor to, like, ceiling, tibias, fibulas, arm bones, heads, skulls. And it's somber and beautiful at the same time. And it's just something you have to, like, see and do. So we did that. That was our last day. And, you know, we really enjoyed walking around the streets and going to the bakeries and looking at the cafes and shopping. You have to just stay and look up and see all the buildings are built to the same height. And they're all 250 years old. It's just gorgeous. It's just beautiful. I think immersing yourself in, like, walking around was like the highlight of the trip. But I'm paranoid, and I'm like, we got to get packed up, we got to go to bed, because we got to get up at like 2:30 the next morning, right? Like, I got three kids that don't want to wake up. They're tired, they're crabby, and this is the end of vacation. But I'm like, there's one last sight I haven't seen. And again, now I've got like this incredible desire to see like every church in Paris. The headliner, which isn't Notre Dame, because Notre Dame is now, is called Sacré-Cœur. And it's on the highest natural peak in the city of Paris in Montmartre. So you have to go to, you know, you take the one line that was open was the 14 metro line. We took the 14 metro line to Saint-Lazare, and then you could walk to Sacré-Cœur. But on the way, I'm like, you know what? That's not too far from Moulin Rouge. So I'm like, that's where like there's been several movies of Moulin Rouge, the famous can-can dancers from Paris. It's the giant windmill that you see like in like the advertisements. Let's go do that. Okay, let's just see it. The street immediately to the right, like I mentioned before, is filled with adult shop after adult shop after adult shop after adult shop. Next to a McDonald's, next to an adult shop, next to an adult shop, next to a Starbucks, that's what it's like. It's just a European standard of things. So it is their red light district. There are like a dancing bar across the street. So you just accepted you were going to see Moulin Rouge.
You mean like ballroom?
Yeah. I'm gonna leave that. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. I'm gonna leave that. You could have used different words. All right. I'm just gonna throw it out there. you just could have used different words. Anyways, no one batted an eye. Families on that street, like teenagers, old people, like it was just an accepted norm in Paris that it existed. And in some bizarre way, like I would have been disappointed after walking through there that I hadn't seen that, or like I hadn't had my kids see that, because you want to expose them to what is a different culture and a different society. We're not walking in the stores. We're not making goofy comments. We're not, you know, but like that is what it is, you know? And as you walk past it, you're like, okay, we're through that area. You see this basilica on top of the highest peak in Paris. And like, it's this godforsaken walk up to the top that literally exhausts you. And again, much like every church in Paris, when you walk in, like you were like, holy mother. As you walk in and you look at these, the peak and the gold inlays and the mosaics and like the little chapels along the sides of the actual basilica, like jaw-droppingly inspiring. So beautiful. The most beautiful thing you could see like in Paris are these churches. And the view of from Sacré-Cœur out, as you stared out, which would be south, you literally see the entirety of the city of Paris as it like kind of like spreads out in front of you. And if you see it at like sunset, like the lights of Paris kicking on, it's called the City of Lights for a good reason. All the lights turn on and everything's shining and glowing, and like it's like you got to pinch yourself and say, am I really here? And like your photos it doesn't do it justice. Like, it just doesn't capture the look and the smell. But, like, it was completely worth any hassle, any struggle, any stress to get there to see it. And you know what? I'm proud to say that, honestly, the kids behaved themselves. And whatever memories they took from there, like they all, like, got along. Yeah, 14-year-olds would do stupid things, and the 7-year-olds were crabby at some point. But, like, we never had a blow-up. We never had, like, anyone stop walking, anyone, like, just freaked out. We tried food from, like, every culture. We ate so many croissants. So, you know, I've been working hard to lose weight. You know that. I left for vacation at 182. I came back at 178.6. And, like, I legitimately was eating all day long from all the walking we were doing. So, but it's so worth it. And if you needed a gateway European city to expose yourself to European culture, to French culture, to Parisian style, to Parisian culture, oh my heavens, I completely recommend it. But it's a city. It's dirty at parts. It's loud. It's obnoxious. It's gorgeous. It's heavenly. It's scandalous. It's everything all rolled into one. But you just accept it as it is and you move on, you know, and you take what you can from it. But really, really cool. I would say that it was probably one of my top 2 or 3 favorite vacations of all time, just because you were completely immersed. So anyways, I've been talking a long time. You got any questions? Cause I just never shut up.
I don't think so. I'm intrigued by Paris. I am. I don't know if it's because I don't see it in my near future going, or if it's just not, I don't know how to explain it, but you've definitely piqued my interest. There's things that I think, I don't know how to explain it. I think you gain perspective by traveling to different places, mm-hmm. seeing how different people live, how things are, because I think by doing that, you can learn things. Because, you know, constantly doing things the way that we do, you know, I think you could take pieces from different cultures and add them to your life. Is there anything in particular that you found there that you brought back with you? Any particular attitude or any particular, I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah.
Anything that you brought home with you that you can say, you know what, Paris is what caused me to do this.
You know what? That's a great question. I love that question. Here's what I learned, and I kind of knew about this beforehand. Parisians and French, they live well. By that I mean, like, their food portions. So I'm not knocking Florida. I love Florida. You know that. It's like my second home. Like, when you go down the street in Florida, what do you see? You see Applebee's. You see Chick-fil-A. You see all these chains back to back to back. Or you see, like, a CC's Pizza. And what's the idea of CC's Pizza? We're going to charge you $6. We're going to fill your belly. The pizza really isn't that good, but heck, you're going to eat so much, you'll be happy. And, like, the Parisian culture is like, I'd rather pay more, eat less, and eat really good. Like, we didn't have a bad meal in Paris. Like, there was nothing that we ate that we were like, this is terrible. This is awful. In Disneyland, it's different. You know, it's not quite the same. But in the Paris itself, they live well. They dress well. They're not fashion plates. Everything is thought with intent. So, like, in the States, this is broad sweeping. We're the culture of, like, excess. This is what America is. But, like, in European countries, they don't have the space to spread out. That is the space they have. So they have to be efficient with their design. An example is the washer and dryer in our unit. It was one. The same. It washed the clothes. It dried the clothes in the exact same unit. There wasn't a separate washer and dryer in the exact same unit. So it is, like, it's a little more efficient. And, you know, you kind of just, I learned with Paris, this corresponds with my lifestyle anyways. You go with the flow of things. The moment, you just have to, like, put your foot in, like, the stream and let the stream take you. And where you end up is where you end up. And enjoy the ride while you're there. And it's like that. If you navigate a Paris street, like you have to just kind of go where the street takes you. And then when you look around the corner, you're like, what church is that, or what is that, and you explore it. So I would say they live well, they live efficiently, and you know, they're wonderful. They never made us feel out of sorts. So I don't know if that answers your question, but it was a great question.
It does, and I think that is important. A lot of times, we just kind of hear. I hate to stereotype, and I hate to say, you know, negative things about where we live and such like that. But we have to admit, there's times that we just do things because we do them. I mean, like you had said with food. Now we just know we have to eat. And it doesn't matter what we're eating a lot of times. It's just whatever's either convenient, whatever's cheap. We don't really put a lot of thought and intent. And I think that's how I end up the weight that I have, mm-hmm. because a lot of times it comes down to convenience and stuff like that. So I think that living intentional, that's something I've been trying and wanting to do in 2020 as it is. So it's cool that you mentioned that. I think intentionality is extremely important, whether you're talking about what you're putting in your body, whether you're talking about what you purchase mm-hmm. at the store, what you're bringing into your house. You know, there's costs to all these things. And that's cool that you learned that from putting yourself into another culture. I just think that's cool.
Last point to people, because there's questions, and I have friends who would qualify for this. I knew about this from Jan, and when I talked to Jan about her trip to Disneyland Paris. So give me a percentage of Walt Disney World travelers that use ECVs, Michael. Give me a percentage. If you were in a park, if you had 100 people, how many people were using ECVs of that 100?
Out of 100, I'm not going to get ridiculous. I'll say 10, maybe 8 to 10.
Okay. I think it's slightly higher. I won't say like 20, but I think it's between 10 to 15 people. Okay. There, it might be a half a person. Legitimately, there are no ECVs in the park. Like it just doesn't exist. There were a bunch of people that used not a crutch, but like it's... you hold it with your hand and it goes halfway up your forearm and it braces your forearm, and they would put them on like either side and walk. Like, that was common. I saw a bunch of those people using a support, but like no ECVs. On the street, there are no ECVs of Paris. There are very few wheelchairs in Paris. There are a bunch of people that use walking assistance. So Paris is this unique mix of like chaos and like it's just this great conflagration, but they haven't grabbed onto the ECV culture. Now, I did see it, and they were accommodating. There were a few attractions that might be difficult if you were an ECV, but like it wasn't very common. So if you needed that, it was definitely possible, because we saw people assisting. I don't know where you'd get it from. You'd have to do some research to figure out where to get it from, because it wasn't so readily available. I don't know if I actually saw Disney renting them themselves. So, yeah, that's completely valid, because there are some people that may have a hard time without that. Luckily, those parks, if your intent was Disney, it isn't the same walking distance and size as you're used to in the States. So it's a little smaller, and it's not quite as much physically demanding on your body. So, but ECV haven't grabbed on at all over there.
That's interesting.
So, anyways, I think that's all that I have. I'm looking here, you know, souvenir shopping. Oh, yeah, we did a lot of souvenir shopping. But my souvenir shopping always comes in the form of food. So I love to go to grocery stores and buy things that are made in Paris, made in St. Louis, made in Minnesota, made in Florida, and bring them back with me. So I brought back a whole bunch of stuff that were made in France and in Paris. So that's my version of souvenir shopping. Everyone else bought a little something else. And if I can answer any questions for anybody about anything, the Arc de Triomphe, the Eiffel Tower, if you got an attraction, we probably saw it. Every day was a 12-hour day out walking, and I can help. So if you're intimidated, if you have any questions, like, shoot me a direct message. I want to help, because as much as I love Disney, my desire to travel is just as great, and I love having a safe home to come to, which is Walt Disney World and Disneyland. But I love experiencing new things and like immersing myself in the culture. Lastly, as an American, we automatically gravitate to certain news channels or news outlets. We're not going to get into a political discussion. If you're Republican, if you're Democrat, Fox News, CNN, whatever you want to, you know, that's where you get your news from. It's super interesting to hear a different perspective, a fresh perspective, a European perspective on the affairs of the world, and then have them like refer to America's actions. It's interesting hearing how the world views United States as opposed to thinking we're United States. It's really, really eye-opening to hear that in terms of news outlets. You can even check that out at home. Go to YouTube, go and check out Sky News, and that's from Britain. And just listen to Sky News for a while. It's not like they bash America. It's just an interesting perspective on what America does. And you kind of gain that when you travel. I know I'm getting all philosophical here. But like, remember, part of the reason why we travel to Walt Disney World is to reconnect with our emotions and our feelings in our childhood and to enjoy. But part of it is education and fun, too. And so if you get outside your comfort zone and you explore a different country, that's like the greatest way. So, all good in the hood, brother?
I feel content.
That's beautiful. All right. The WDW Review Facebook page. Edcot's our listener group. So check out Edcot, EDCOT. And poor Michael has to navigate through hundreds of videos that I sent him, and I feel bad, but you're going to find that on Theme Park Brothers. And if you're not checking it out for that, if you want Orlando vacation videos from resorts, from Universal, from SeaWorld, from Legoland, from Busch Gardens, from every Disney resort, every Disney park, Michael is the man. He's got the best quality footage, and it's been my honor to have you as a buddy for many years. So I'm excited to see what you're going to do with this video as well, too.
I'm excited to see what I do with it, too.
All right. All right. So for my buddy Michael and myself, thank you for staying with me and letting me blather on, everybody. And have a great day. Au revoir.